Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Gastola. I'm managing editor for Shadowproof.com, and I'm pleased to be joined again by Aaron Sinek, who's a journalist who's been working on a series for Shadowproof.com on the Chicago mayor's race. And he's recently published a piece on education justice activism and its impact on the Chicago mayor's race. So welcome back, Aaron.
Thanks for having me again.
And again, this is part of a limited podcast series that we have been doing throughout this election. And it digs into what we think are issues that are really substantial to the city, but also which these candidates, no matter who wins, and we're down to two now, no matter who wins, they will be critical for them to address, or they will become issues they have to grapple with when they are the Chicago mayor. And so we're down to Lori Lightfoot and we're down to Tony Preckwinkle, because the runoff election took place in the last week of February. So Aaron, why don't you start us off, before we dig into your education justice piece, why don't you start off by giving people a summary of who each of these candidates are and some of their, you know, background as far as how they respond to activism?
Yeah, sure. So, first of all, you know, there is an element of history here in that either way, this election, you know, the runoff election shakes out, you know, Chicago will choose its first black woman mayor. And that was something that I think, you know, a lot of people on election night were sort of, you know, surprised. We all kind of figured that we might end up with, you know, one person versus Daley, but, you know, here we are. So you have, you know, our two candidates, as you said, you know, Lori Lightfoot, who is a former federal prosecutor, and Tony Preckwinkle, who is the current Cook County Board president. During the race, you know, I saw both of these candidates at a number of forums, and they do... Thanks to, I think, the sustained activism over the past, you know, 8 or more years, depending, you know, at least we'll just say during Rahm Emanuel's term, pushing left on a lot of issues. I think that, you know, these two candidates both adopted a very, very progressive platform. These are two people who both committed to putting $25 million into reopening mental health clinics, supporting free tuition for city colleges, ending student-based budgeting at CPS, abolishing the gang database, calling for a delay on mega TIF proposals, and supporting free transit on the CTA for seniors and youth. And that's a big, you know, those are all huge, big issues, and they're both very much aligned. So, you know, the question is, you know, what makes them, you know, different? And I think that's what, you know, folks are really trying to dig into and find out over the next 4 weeks. You know, as I said, Lightfoot is a former federal prosecutor, and also someone, you know, who worked, you know, who was appointed to a position in the police board. And she's, you know, she's a person who... I think, you know, there are a lot of activists out there involved, you know, who do work with police accountability who don't trust her because they've seen, you know, how she's operated in hearings and whatnot, you know, that where folks are, you know, taking, you know, talking about, you know, officer misconduct and things like that. You know, from certain activist perspectives, she's someone who I think is seen as a person who is protected cops who have been accused of doing bad things. And, you know, as a prosecutor is also somebody who put people in jail. And so I think that, you know, you have a lot of folks who are, you know, questioning sort of, you know, what that could mean, you know, in a city where that has had huge problems of, you know, either covering up or not addressing police misconduct. You know, as far as Preckwinkle goes, you know, she's been Cook County Board President for 8 years. I think, you know, she's sort of, you know, some activists have lined up behind her because she's been very, very good with the issue of bond and trying to, you know, essentially eliminate, you know, cash bond. And you know, she's done, you know, she's done things to help, you know, get more people who shouldn't be in Cook County jail out of Cook County jail. So I think you have some more trust on, you know, her side from some people. But then again, also, she's sort of, you know, she's been in government for, you know, quite a long time. You know, she, you know, before she was board president, at one point she was alderman. And so I think people sort of, whenever somebody has been, you know, in a very, very high profile public government position for a long time, people see that as an establishment candidate. People see that as somebody who, you know, oh, well, this, you know, this is somebody who's probably part of the machine. And she certainly has connections that she still has to address. Namely being Ed Burke, who is the city's longest serving alderman, who is, you know, under, you know, is under federal investigation for corruption.
People, by the way, were willing to reelect.
Yes, exactly. Who somehow, you know, despite all of this, he still managed to keep his seat. And so, you know, because Preckwinkle has, you know, connections to Burke, you know, that's going to hurt her, I think. You know, and I think so. And then also, you know, Lightfoot is a candidate who, you know, again, I think seems much newer and fresher. You know, to a large portion of the city who might not have even known, you know, her name 2 years ago. You know, this is now somebody with, you know, that folks are, you know, starting to become energetic about. I mean, the most recent poll, which was run it was published this week. I'll just put it that way. It's a small poll. It was only 400 voters, but 58% of folks are pulling for Lightfoot, whereas only 30% of folks are pulling for Preckwinkle, with 12% undecided. Now, of course, that poll itself is a little suspect because it comes from an organization called Stand for Children, which is a group that's very, we'll just say, anti-union and very, very pro-charter, you know, kind of like corporate style education. So, you know, all polls, of course, are you know, suspect for a lot of reasons, but especially when they're commissioned by groups that definitely have a particular agenda, right? And so really, the next, when it all comes down to it, you know, the next 4 weeks is going to be, you know, one, a good portion of Chicago really being able to drill down between these two candidates, and figure out, like, okay, well, which one is going to be the best person for this job. And I think the good thing about the fact that, you know, they have platforms that are very, very similar, and they, you know, talk a lot about similar issues on the campaign trail, and kind of line up in support of them, is that, you know, it's clear that folks have already moved these people. And so the question then becomes, which candidate is going to be the one that we will be able to hold accountable and will actually go ahead and move forward and do these things? And I think that's where the real sort of decision comes down to. You know, will it be, you know, is Lightfoot a candidate that, you know, will actually, you know, put up and do all of these things? Or is Preckwinkle somebody who's going to put up and do all these things? And can they be moved? And, you know, will we, you know, will we be able to hold them accountable? And that's sort of where we're at, I think.
And then briefly, I'll just note that something that was flagged by people, national coverage of the election that happened, was this piece from The Hill that said that two Democratic socialists win spots on Chicago City Council, three headed to runoffs. And then they had pictures of Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And they could not get pictures of any of the people, apparently, that are going to be on the city council, like Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who's fairly well known nationally at this point. But you've spoken a little bit about this, but I just thought it might be worth it to take a couple minutes or so to just make it clear that, in addition to whoever it's going to be, Lori or Tony, we have a city council that seems to have a new crop of people that are probably going to be pushing for some of this transformative change.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, the way that, the you know, again, for folks who aren't from Chicago, you know, we have a city council that's a body of 50 aldermen. And, you know, in the previous 8 years, that body has been a rubber stamp pretty much for Rahm Emanuel. And so what we saw on election night was pretty incredible, where, you know, several incumbents were beat outright. And a lot of other folks were pushed into a runoff, but you had, you know, staunch Rahm Emanuel allies like Joe Marino and Joe Moore that were just straight up defeated. And, you know, by people who, you know, are definitely, you know, much more progressive. I mean, the woman who defeated Joe Moore, Maria Haddon, literally, you know, the week after it might have been just a day or two after Election Day, was at a press conference in City Hall with the No Cop Academy activists who are fighting the $95 million brand new police academy. And that's incredible to just sort of see that. There were a couple of other candidates who are in runoffs who were part of that, too. And then you also have this, you know, the fact that we had one DSA member, Carlos Rosa, on city council these past 4 years. And at this point, we're poised to have up to five after the runoff shakeout. And that is that's just something that I think, you know, again, you know, this is what sustained organizing and activism does and, you know, can do when it comes to elections, is that, you know, you need, you know, if you're organizing in the streets and you're organizing in, you know, whatever way you can move candidates, or sometimes you can even run your own. You know, the DSA endorsed, I think, what was it, like six or seven people or something like that. And the majority of them are either poised to be in a runoff or actually already won. And so that is, you know, that's just something that I think is unprecedented in any, you know, in any major city in the United States at this point. I mean, you know, to see that sort of, like, you know, the city council move that far left is just absolutely incredible. And it kind of, you know, it gives at least me a little hope that, you know, we might have a mayor, we'll definitely have a mayor that's more progressive and, you know, more willing to work with people than Rahm Emanuel. And we'll also have a city council that's willing, you know, to work with the folks in their wards and then also go to bat for people. And that's something that I have not seen in a very long time, or if ever, honestly, in my lifetime.
Yeah, it'd be hard to stress how important it is when you've had such a machine government, and when you're a one-party city that's just the Democratic Party, so nobody in the party wants to be on the bad side of the person who's a mayor. So let's get to your education justice piece, which was published on February 28th, a couple days after the election. It's headlined "Backlash to Rahm Emanuel's Education Record." "Backlash to Rahm Emanuel's Education Record Impacts Chicago Mayor's Race," was what we called it. And so, and by the way, for people who are listening, you know, you're in the middle of wrapping up your series. If it's possible, and you like the work that Aaron's doing, if you like the work we're doing here with this podcast, I encourage you to donate and chip in to continue to make his journalism possible. You can go to shadowproof.com and find the donate button and click and throw in a few bucks. It would be really good. But to your piece about education justice activism, I think the first issue to just get into, we can start broadly, is that a lot of the neglect of public schools truly hung over this race because of how vast and deep this policy was with Rahm Emanuel, and just how much injustice he's created through his government.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, it's within his first 2 years of being in office, he presided over the first teacher strike in 25 years, and then the largest closure of public schools in, you know, the city's history, and I believe in the history of the nation, honestly. You know, this was somebody who, you know, was aggressively pro-charter for all of, you know, for his whole 8 years, but was aggressively pro-charter and pro-privatization right out the gate. And so it's something that, you know, the Chicago Teachers Union, which, you know, has endorsed Preckwinkle, you know, went to, you know, fought, you know, started fighting him literally like almost like, you know, almost right after he was in office. And, you know, just as that fight was over, you know, the news came down that, you know, he was going to close. I want to say he ended up closing 50, but the original list was so much higher. And that was a fight that went on for months in this city, where, you know, you had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of parents and students at community meetings across the city. You know, every day, every week, you know, saying, don't close our school, don't close our school. And, you know, there were protests for weeks over it. And I think, you know, that really, that helped, you know, in that he didn't close as many as he originally wanted to, but still closed 50 schools. And, you know, that's a big hit to people who, you know, live, you know, your neighborhood public school gets closed. What, you know, that's a huge anchor point in the community. And so, you know, and then as the years progressed, I mean, you know, the tactics people had to use to sort of fight that fight. I mean, you had, there was a school on the south side called Diet High School that was slated for closure. And people went on a hunger strike for more than a month to fight that closure and succeeded, which is incredible. But the fact that, you know, I mean, there was one woman, you know, I remember when she had to end, you know, her hunger strike because, you know, they straight up said, you know, doctors straight up said, you are going to die if you continue this. And, you know, that woman now is actually somebody, Jeanette Taylor, is somebody who is in a runoff race. She decided to run and, you know, for a spot in, you know, for a position as alderman in her ward. And she, you know, came close, and she's, you know, she could very well be, you know, one of those new aldermen that we'll see after the runoff. And, you know, that's incredible. But that just shows, I think all of this just shows the lengths that, you know, folks who have been fighting for, you know, better neighborhood schools, better resource schools. I mean, one of the other things that, you know, all of the times that the CTU has gone on strike or staged an action or whatever, a lot of times, you know, The way it works is that they have to strike over certain issues, you know, legally speaking, the way the laws are set up. But what they're really doing is demanding more resources in schools. I mean, Chicago, you know, I think it's only one in three or one in four schools actually has a librarian. And, you know, so imagine, you know, going to, you know, imagine being at a school that doesn't have a librarian. You know, imagine being at a school where your teacher is, you know, pulling money out of their own pocket. They, you know, these are schools that are in predominantly Black and Brown communities on the city's south and west sides. And, you know, it just, the whole thing is honestly just, it's incredible how, you know, just how rough, you know, things have been, you know, for Chicago public schools. And so I think that really, you know, over 8 years, that galvanized a lot of people, you know, against, you know, Rahm Emanuel. And it's certainly the school closures played a huge issue in last election cycle. You know, it's what helped force him into a runoff because, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, that's the kind of thing that... I'm trying not to curse because, you know, it's one of those things where it's just bullshit. I mean, I've been covering, you know, I've covered all these things and I've been doing this for a very long time. And the fact that, like, I've seen so much, just injustice when it comes to, you know, education for, you know, Chicago youth and Chicago students, it's just incredible. But I think that, you know, because of that, that really shaped how this race turned out. Because, you know, as I said beforehand, you know, you've got two people now who both committed to, you know, not closing any more schools and, you know, putting, you know, ending student-based budgeting, which, you know, and creating some, you know, another kind of funding formula that would be more equitable, that support free college tuition for Chicago City colleges. I mean, that is huge, the fact that either way we've got a mayor that's committed to this. And I think that is because, you know, that is directly because these are things people have been demanding, you know, in Chicago for years. And, you know, finally, they've got people who are actually going to listen to them. And I think that that's, you know, again, that's just sort of, that's, you know, direct action gets the goods, so to speak. You know, that's, it takes a long time, but it can be done.
Right. We're seeing nationwide these teacher strikes, like in Oakland, that are achieving their goals. And this city has such a rich history of systemic racism in Chicago. I'm going to throw out a book recommendation here, just because it so happens that I was reading this at the same time that you moved on to this for your piece. And so Eve Ewing has this book, Ghosts in the Schoolyard: Racism and School Closings on Chicago's South Side. And it's, you know, just a phenomenal piece of work on the sort of struggles you're describing. And I think I just want to take a moment to reflect on how deep the injustice is and how far it reaches back in Chicago's history. And some of the people who may stumble upon this podcast, who are listening and following this series, you know, may have heard for the first time, if they happen to catch any part of the Bernie Sanders rally in Chicago, because he mentioned these Willis wagons. And so I think that just shows like how deep this goes, because, you know, back in the 60s, they were putting these trailers on the school, on black school grounds. Instead of desegregating schools, they were throwing these black children into these trailers that were overheating and boiling and making kids freeze. And that was the way the city decided to deal with those issues then. And it doesn't seem like there's all been a lot of change in the last 50 to 60 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is still, you know, There has been some change in some cases, and I think, you know, we are lucky in that there are so many people who have been fighting this fight for a long time, but it's also exhausting. But, you know, the fact that that was only, you know, such a short while ago, you know, should give people pause, you know, to understand how far we still have to go. I mean, you know, we're not in a case right now where, you know, kids are being put in these inhospitable and awful trailers. But if you've been through some of the schools in, you know, some of the neighborhoods on the south and west sides, there are, you know, there's a lot wrong with them, and there are inhospitable conditions in some of those schools. And so we still have, you know, so much further to go in getting, you know, getting our schools and getting our kids and getting our youth the resources they need. You know, you brought up the Sanders rally, and Destiny Harris, who spoke. And I think it's great that, you know, she was given, her alongside the other one, Ashley Galvin Ramos, were both given a platform. But, you know, one of the things that Ashley said, but Destiny said in her speech to the crowd, was that, you know, she got into activism because she was one of the kids whose schools got closed. And so, you know, that injustice directly, you know, she was, what was it, at the age of 12, you know, her underfunded, predominantly black elementary school on the west side of Chicago got shut down. And, you know, schools her friends went to got shut down. And so, you know, that, you know, that I think, you know, to be so young and to have that kind of, you know, injustice happen to you. I mean, you know, and the thing is, it's not just in 2013. I mean, you know, just, I think it was just last year. It was either last year or the year before, you know, the city closed all four high schools in Englewood, a, you know, predominantly African-American Southside neighborhood. And, you know, I mean, these kids were, you know, I remember, you know, being in high school, and I don't ever remember having to like go to City Hall and stage a sit-in, and nearly get arrested just to keep my school open. That was something that I never experienced, and the fact that anyone has to do that, I mean, is just awful. But also, it is at least something that, you know, it shows that, you know, kids really do care. They really do care. They understand and they care about their communities and they're willing to fight for them. And that, I think, is something that, you know, I mean, God bless them for that. It's just something they shouldn't have to do, you know? And so that I think, you know, shows how far we still have to go in trying to get justice, not only in education, but, you know, for everything, but for people.
And also to hear people talk about their schools, one thing I just will throw into this discussion that as I've been digging into this issue, and this is something that Eve Ewing brings up, and I'm wondering if you've experienced it in talking to activists, organizers, people impacted by these schools, is this mourning of the loss of their schools actually has a lot of similarity with the way in which people respond to Chicago police gunning down and shooting someone like Laquan McDonald or someone like Rekia Boyd, because it leaves them stricken with this grief that they are not really sure about how to deal with. So there's a lot of pain. And I think that's something that people really should understand, that that's probably part of what makes the reaction to Rahm Emanuel's policies so visceral, is that in a lot of places, you know, the city's actually destroying family that they had or people they were friends with. They're destroying homes, places that they considered as home, and it really traumatizes them.
Well, and two, I think to add to that, there's also the resources to process that trauma and to deal with that trauma, be it of a school closure or be it of, you know, having a loved one, you know, killed or injured or whatever. You know, they're just not there. I mean, I was back after the Parkland shooting, I was interviewing a few Chicago public school teachers, because, you know, the NRA and the right and Trump and all those folks were saying, well, this is why we need to arm teachers. And so I went around to some Chicago public school teachers to ask them, you know, what they thought about that. All of them, you know, had, you know, a visceral, you know, visceral no, you know, reaction to it. But one of the things one teacher told me who teaches at a middle school on the northwest side was that he said, you know, my kids, you know, we have one counselor for something like, it was like 800 or 1,000 kids, and that person isn't there every day, so they don't, there just aren't the resources, you know. And these kids, and, you know, I was like, well, you know, are your kids worried about, you know, mass shootings? He's like, no, they're worried about getting shot in the neighborhood. You know, they're worried about, you know, getting, you know, shot or harassed by the cops. They're worried about, you know, getting, you know, caught up in a drive-by or something like that, you know. And he's like, and, you know, when we see at-risk people, we try to do what we can for them. But the reality is they just don't have the resources, just aren't there. To help people process this trauma. I mean, it was something that I talked about too in, you know, my previous piece on police accountability, is that, you know, there are folks here who are fighting to get, you know, more, you know, mental health clinics and more, you know, funding for counseling for people in neighborhoods who've experienced violence and trauma, because in a lot of cases there's just nowhere for folks to go to, like, to process that pain. And so that's something that, you know, that is a resource that would greatly benefit everyone, because, you know, trauma begets trauma. Violence begets violence. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we need to be putting our money and resources into this instead of into, you know, big development projects like Lincoln Yards, and, you know, giving other, you know, big entities giant tax breaks and whatnot. We need to be taking this money and investing it in our communities and helping, you know, our youth and our families and our communities. Sorry, lost my train of thought there.
Yeah, no, it needs to be put into our communities. So, you know, we've been going for about a half hour here, so I'd like to wrap. But I think one note to end on here is just to be to clarify something for people who may not be fully aware that Chicago does not have an elected school board. So the people who run this education system, the reason or partly why it is so terrible for people on the West and South sides, or in Black and brown neighborhoods in particular, is because the people who are making these decisions do not get elected by the people of Chicago. They're appointees by the Chicago mayor.
Yes, that is correct. And so that is something that, you know, people have long been trying to change, because, you know, they really do believe in, you know, an elected representative school board is going to be is the first step in trying to get, you know, education policies that people want. Now, we can't actually, that's something that has to be done at the state level with Illinois government, but it is something that, you know, our current governor has said he supported it, and, you know, the majority of the legislature in Springfield would support. And so really, you know, we just need a mayor who's on board with it and willing to go to Springfield to say, hey, we need to, you know, make it so that we can have an elected school board. And, you know, that is something that we will have, you know, after the runoff, because, as I've said, you know, both of these candidates support it. So that's good. And that's the first step into, you know, getting, you know, a more equal and better system.
Well, thanks, Aaron, for taking the time to speak to us about this. You do have one more piece that you're going to be working on. So for those of you who are following this series, the next piece is going to be on corruption and just general accountability issues within the city, right?
That's right.
And so, and that should be out in the next week or so. And again, if you want to support this work, continue to make this kind of journalism possible, you can go to shadowproof.com/donate and chip in a few dollars to go directly to Aaron for this work. So again, Aaron, thank you for talking with us.
All right. Thanks, Ben. I'll talk to you later.
This conversation was recorded on March 5th. So a quick addition to our conversation, some news that broke, which was relevant to what we talked about. We spoke about Lori Lightfoot. We spoke about how the Chicago Teachers Union has endorsed Tony Preckwinkle. And I just want to add to our conversation a little addendum here that the Chicago Teachers Union has attacked Lori Lightfoot for receiving a big political donation from the CEO of one of Chicago's most wealthy and clouded investment firms, is what they say. His name is John Canning. He spent $200,000 on Bill Daley's campaign that supported school closures, pension cuts, and education privatization, they say. Today, he is supporting Lightfoot, along with the ask that she support Rauner's despised $100 million education voucher program, which the Chicago Teachers Union says would be a tax boon for rich elites that sucks millions of dollars out of already deeply underfunded public schools. They go on to say, Canning's top executives at Madison Dearborn pumped more than $9 million into the coffers of both Republican candidates and Rahm Emanuel, Richard M. Daley, and the disgraced former Chicago Public Schools CEO Forrest Claypool, the very individuals who have starved our public schools, defunded special education, and robbed our South and West Side neighborhoods of desperately needed investment. He's embraced Lightfoot because she, like Emanuel, will serve clouded business elites at the expense of the rest of us. And they go on to say that Chicago's families have suffered for years under the Rahm Rauner Daley agenda of privatization, austerity, and public subsidies for private corporate interests at the expense of working class families and neighborhoods. Chicagoans don't want another Rahm or Daley in City Hall. They want a candidate like Tony Preckwinkle, who will bring real equity to city government and end Rahm's failed educational and economic schemes. Chicagoans know how to follow the money and understand what Canning's dollars say about Lightfoot's willingness to support the same failed policies that have plagued our city under 8 years of Emanuel's rule. And so this is coming from a press release from the Chicago Teachers Union that was put out on March 7th. And I think it is extremely relevant to the conversation that we had about Lori Lightfoot versus Toni Preckwinkle. But again, just to note that both of them are going to be going back and forth between each other to argue over who is more machine. This is just Chicago Teachers Union making the case that Lori Lightfoot right now seems like she's willing to be more friendly to education privatizers and wealthy elites that put public schools in Chicago at risk. So thank you. We'll be back with another conversation soon on the final piece in Aaron Siddick's series. And again, that'll be on accountability and corruption in the city of Chicago.